Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Peter Paul Berzola. Well, we've got to play our new theme. excuse me. So, welcome to, here it comes. A little problem with the switchboard. It's raining outside, and I don't know why this thing is a little bit too slow. But anyway, come on. It's an interesting day, February 23rd. Let's give you a little history before we get into national lotteries. I guess our theme is not going to come up. I don't know what happened here, so we'll just... Oh, here we go. It's appropriate because in many ways a lot of politicians are concerned that they're going to survive. And yeah, it's a little lower there, blasting people's ears before. Anyway, if they don't get their act together in Congress, there'll be a lot of politicians who will be marched to the scaffold by very angry voters and taxpayers here in the States. Interesting history today. In 1455, the first Gutenberg Bible was printed from movable type. A lot of people who don't know medieval history, the control of printing was in the Catholic monasteries, and especially the Irish monks who were very literate, were doing hand copying. And when Gutenberg invented the movable press, that broke the monopoly of the... I guess you could say the Catholic Church and their monks. And communication, that was the first major Western break in communication. And, of course, we've had the telegraph, the telephone, TV, radio, and now the Internet, which we're using. And here's some other interesting dates. We're going to jump way ahead. In 1836, that started the part of the Mexican War, which got Abraham Lincoln in trouble. He opposed it, and he said, "Show me the spot where American blood was spilt," and he made a fool of himself. He later became president, as you, those of you who know our history or study it. Anyway, there was the first siege of the Alamo. Now, the Mexicans' position was that Texas was a province of Mexico, and what had happened was the deal was the Mexicans, after they got their independence from Spain, invited Americans to come to Texas to cultivate and settle the place. Incidentally, Texas is very interesting. The first wineries were not started by the monks, and the monks started the wineries here in America. It was not started in California. It was started in Texas in 1500. Also, the first Asian, they were illegals, who came to this continent were not Chinese. They were Filipinos. And the reason this occurred because Spain had discovered the Philippines and had brutally colonized them and made them Catholics. And they impressed the young men onto the Spanish galleons and brutalized them. So when the Filipino youth came within sight of land, they jumped ship. And some of them may have ended up in the states that border the Gulf of Mexico, like Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, California. Excuse me. And then, let's see, what else we have? Oh, yeah, and there are three films made on the Battle of the Alamo, the Siege of the Alamo. The first one was a silent film by the great movie director and producer D.W. Griffin, and it was kind of racially biased, but you should see it to get a perspective on history. And there were two more made, one with John Wayne, made in the early 60s. I think Max Steiner did the soundtrack, and then it was recently one on the History Channel. Of course, the Mexicans think a little differently about it. And then the first antitrust law in the United States was enacted by, in all places, Alabama in 1883. And in 1898, a very important date for anybody who's concerned about the rights of military servicemen, especially non-coms. Emile Zola, my intellectual ancestor, was quite a novelist. He was called a cheap novelist. He wrote some very good books. Anyway, he finally came around and believed that Captain Alfred Dreyfus, who was Jewish, which was unusual in the French, he was an artillery officer, graduated from the French West Point, Saint-Cyr, and he was accused of spying and selling secrets to Germany, which the French had just lost the bitter war, the Franco-Prussian War. They lost it in 3 weeks, I believe, and that had been, was in 1870. And he was railroaded, kangaroo court trial, a military trial, court-martial, all kinds of violations, and they tried to get him to commit suicide so this thing would be forgotten. Instead, he was exiled and in prison on Devil's Island in French Guiana, which is also has a connection to San Francisco, where the Reverend Jim Jones went in that area, but not French Guiana. And that was closed several years ago. But what the deal was, when a convict served his time in French Guiana, he could never return to France. And the movie Papillon, with Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman, I forgot the other two actors, is fairly accurate, although there's some controversy about Papillon. Papillon in French means butterfly. When they served their time, many tried to escape and failed, and if they were brought back, their sentence was increased. Also, if they attacked a guard, they were guillotined. A lot of horrible things happened on that island besides the climate and temperature and the abuse of prisoners and human rights violations. But they were exiled forever to that island, and they managed to make their living and exist in the little city there. I understand it's becoming, the French also have a space station there. I think they were shooting off their rockets. But Emile Zola took the case of Captain Dreyfus, and he wrote this famous headline and newspaper article, J'accuse. And more movies have been written about the Dreyfus case. There have been 9 movies that have been produced. The most recent was starring Richard Dreyfus in an opposite role. He didn't play his great uncle, Dreyfus, but he played the colonel who who was anti-Semitic, and but knew that Dreyfus was innocent and was being railroaded. Let's see, what else? And in 1917, we had the start of the first demonstrations in St. Petersburg, which later became Leningrad, and then it's St. Petersburg again. That started the Russian Revolution. And in 1927, the Federal Radio Commission, or what became the FCC, was started by Calvin Coolidge, who succeeded Warren G. Harding, who was actually, history is accurate, Harding was the first president with black or Negro or African ancestry. And when he was accused of this many times, and he finally said, look, I can't help it if any of my ancestors jumped over the back fence. So this whole business about Obama, it's just bad history. Harding died, and Harding had a great voice. He was the first president to use the radio. He had this great booming voice, and he was part of the Ohio gang. And his election in 1921 was the only election in recent American history where none of the candidates for the presidency had a law degree or were lawyers or had studied the law. Just about everybody, John F. Kennedy was a historian, excuse me, and I think Lyndon Johnson did study law. Harry Truman was an administrative law judge. The peanut farmer, Carter, was a naval engineer and wasn't an admiral, but I think he was a captain on a ship there in the U.S. Navy. So we forget those recent people. I've still got a cold, so forgive me. And then, let's see, what do we got here? 1941, Glenn Seaborg, who later became chancellor or president of the University of California, Berkeley, I hope I have my facts right on that one, he discovered and developed plutonium, and later they made a bomb out of it. And in 1942, a Japanese submarine surfaced and shelled an oil refinery near Santa Barbara, California. And then later in the war, the Japanese started germ warfare, the same stuff that's like anthrax that they had dumped on the Chinese when they invaded China and were trying to defeat both Mao and Chiang Kai-shek. They did horrible things, but they sent balloons filled with germ biological warfare into the air, into the Pacific stream, and a couple landed in rural areas of Oregon and killed a few people. So that was the second time the Japanese attacked the continental United States in different ways. It was not very successful. And, of course, we are still living with the specter of the terrorism in California. The Symbionese Liberation Army, which had kidnapped Patty Hearst, the granddaughter of William Randolph Hearst of the Hearst Papers and all those publications, they were trying to shake down the Hearst family for an additional $4 million. They had this food giveaway with Safeway. It was a big mess, and it ended up in a big shootout when the LAPD and various various law enforcement encountered or surrounded this house down in L.A. And one of the people who has worked on the Steve Nares case, he's dead now, died of cancer, U.S. Air Force veteran. He got an Emmy for his work on that case. We'll bring him up at another time. He died in Arkansas. Great guy. And then we have, more up to date, in 2009 we had Obama, who came along with this $787 billion economic stimulus, which there's a lot of controversy about because they don't know where the money, how much of that money has really been spent to produce jobs. Now, here's some interesting birthdays, which are relevant to events and controversies that are going on today. In 1734, on this date, Meyer Rothschild was born in, I think, Germany, and he was the founder of the House of Rothschild, and he has sent his sons to various countries to set up banking and lending institutions. We have the House of Rothschild in France, in England, in Germany, and then, of course, they have a connection here in the States. And, of course, there's been a lot of controversy about the Rothschilds who are trying to rule the world and that sort of thing, but I'll leave that to other people who can thrash that out. And in 1868, one of the first of the black civil rights leaders was born, W.E. Du Bois. And, of course, he was trying to make blacks aware that their rights are being violated and what to do about it. I think he ran for president. And then, along with the civil rights in the South, in 1883, Victor Fleming was born. He was the guy who took over the production and finally finished the film Gone with the Wind, as you know, was about the South, and great film. Interestingly, Vivian Lee took $20,000 paycheck out of that, and that was all she got. Clark Gable was smarter. He took a percentage of the theater take and made him a millionaire. And then, let's see, who else? In 1911, those of you who use Menin cosmetic products, G. Menin Williams was born. He was later governor of Michigan. It was they called him Soapy Williams. And then those of us who are from the hippie generation, 1940, Peter Fonda, the son of Henry Fonda and the brother of Jane, he was born, and I think he has a daughter today. Excuse me, still got a bit of a cold there. Then some interesting deaths. We have in 1828, John Quincy Adams, he died. He was the only president to return to Congress as a member of the House of Representatives. Andrew Johnson returned to the Congress as a U.S. Senator. And then this is something that's very relevant. In 1924, President Thomas Woodrow Wilson, that was his first name, he died. He was responsible for creating that controversy called the Federal Reserve Bank, one of the people. And then we have 1968, Edna Ferber, the author of Giant, the movie, one of the last movies that James Dean starred in. He was born. And then we have 1990, General James Gavin. He commanded the 82nd Airborne, and you can see him depicted. I forgot his name. He's always getting in trouble. in A Bridge Too Far. Great film. One of the things that we, should there be a national lottery? It's interesting how ignorant people are of the history of lotteries. It's a lot of good information. Now, I can speak from personal experience. One of my first jobs was, when I worked in Federal Building, was interception of lottery tickets, predominantly Irish sweepstakes, as they were called in those days. There was a lot of counterfeiting going on. I can still remember one. I got a notification to look for something that was coming from Providence, Rhode Island, and I did find it. But the hypocrisy of my bosses, they were all around me selling these things for $2 in those days, and you never knew for sure whether or not the tickets were genuine because there was some counterfeiting. But it started in 1930 to fund the Irish hospitals, which were among the best in the world. And I think, I keep bringing this up, I think maybe this is a way we can start funding and reducing some of our deficits and funding some of our medical and budgetary costs. For instance, a lot of people don't know that lotteries go back to the time of Caesar. Today we have at least 63 countries that have lotteries, and we have 42 states. Utah is not among them, but what's interesting about Utahns, I think that's how you pronounce it, they go to Nevada. It's interesting. When I was in Las Vegas twice there for conventions, book publishers and that, it was interesting to watch. I believe they were Mormons or Jack Mormons. Those of you who haven't been to Nevada, they have slot machines all over the place. I think they even have them in one place in the Johns. But they were in the airport, and one guy hit a big jackpot, and you should see the eyes of these people coming in to attend conventions, and they couldn't play the slot machines of the one-armed bandits. But Nevada's opposing a national lottery, or I don't know what Harry Reid's position is on it right now. Of course, he may be carried out if people have their way. But it's interesting that countries around the world do fund a lot of their deficits. I guess, Greece may not be among them. We know all the problems that are there. But there were lotteries in this country at the turn of the when we became a nation. When President George Washington was president, he used the lottery to fund a road westward through Virginia. During the Revolutionary War, Ben Franklin used the lottery to raise money for military supplies, such as cannon. It wasn't until the 1890s that the Congress banned lottery tickets from going through the mail. And in 1930, they banned any gambling sweepstakes. And John Hancock, everybody knows his signature, the biggest signature on the Declaration of Independence, and the Hancock Insurance. He used the lottery to finance Faneuil Hall in Boston. So these lotteries have been around. It's interesting that in the 1800s there was a thing called private lotteries, and they were legal. And in modern times, New Hampshire in 1964 was the first state to legalize a lottery, and then every state, a lot of states have, including California, have their own lottery. So I don't see what the problem is in having a national one, just to make sure that the money goes where it's supposed to go. And some of the biggest pots, I guess that's one way to put it, it's amazing the money in these things. The biggest one was $390 million. I don't know how it was paid out, because some of them are paid out over a period of like 10, 20 years. We've had, that was Mega Millions. These are U.S. Lotteries. $365 million was paid out in Powerball, and another one was $363 million, I think it's the big game, and then $314.9 million in another Powerball. In Europe, where lotteries, I think they started in Belgium, Euro Millions, $180 million was paid out in one lottery. In another one, Super Era Lotto, $147 million. And then the British have had, who are gamblers, had 42 million pounds. I don't know what the translation is into dollars. And then the last one, as of January 12, 2010, this year, it paid out 56 million pounds. That was Britain's largest payout in a lottery in modern times. We have lotteries Germany, 37.6 million is the prize there. The Netherlands, 25 million. Now, some of these lotteries are tax free, and others, the government gets whatever government's the lottery country the lottery's in. The government gets theirs right off the top, just like they do at Nevada. And then in Asia, they have the largest lottery in the Philippines. It's 347.8 million in Filipino dollars, and it translates into 476 million in American dollars. I think that's right. And then Brazil is the largest, has the largest lottery in South America. 145 million is the prize. So the money's there. People are going to gamble, and of course, the lottery started about the time of Caesar and come right down through histories. It's interesting that we hear about the casinos and Monte Carlo and that. In French, in Canada, they do have lotteries, or lotos, as they call them. But interestingly, the French government at one point, even though they have a Confederates type of government at Ottawa, had banned the priests. The Roman Catholic Church put pressure on the government, politicians up there, to ban gambling. Now, it's interesting, a lot of people who go who attend churches regularly, especially Catholic churches, they have bingo nights, and the women just love it. And of course, it's a way to get away from the family and the old man. And of course, I've gone to a couple of them, and it's, sometimes they're like cackling hens. I'm going to jump on for that remark. But these things, they're very profitable. They're fun. People are going to gamble just as they're going to drink and just as they're going to smoke. So the key thing is to do it so you don't gamble away your the family paycheck. And there are people who have done that. That's one of the reasons why people like Carrie Nation was going around smashing saloons and liquor stores, because her husband had drank up his weekly paycheck, and so she became a bitter foe of anything alcoholic. And there are women, there are families where money has been spent on alcohol and gambling. And when the old man came home on Friday night, there was no money to buy food and clothes for the kids, and sometimes not be able to pay the rent. So these things have to be kept under control. It's like anything else, but people are going to do it, so it's a matter of knowing when to stop. And that may be the hard part for some. When I worked for the government, we had a case where a guy was stealing money, and he was betting on the horses. And he got so deeply in debt, he would borrow from the bookies. And it went on, and then he got caught stealing, and he was given a choice of resign or face federal prosecution. So I do remember that case. It was kind of tragic. Nice guy, but he couldn't control his gambling. But people around the world have been doing this since the time of Julius Caesar and down through the ages. And I think the first lottery in England started with Queen Elizabeth back in the 15th century. Now, interestingly, today is also the birthday of Baron Friedrich von Steuben, or Steuben. And born in Germany, I think Magdeburg, which is eastern Germany, also the home of Otto von Bismarck. I came to America. It was said that he molested boys in Germany, or Prussia was known at the time, and he couldn't get employment, so he came to America. That was one of the reasons, and he came with a young squire. Anyway, he's the guy who laid down the foundation and discipline in the Continental Army, and for 150 years, the U.S. Army had followed his techniques and military discipline and training. He was quite successful on that, and he died in, he became a U.S. citizen, and for his work, and he died, I think, in Pennsylvania, and we have Steubenville or Steubenville. Also, you know, this whole, and it relates to this issue of gays in the military. We have had, from the time of Julius Caesar, from the time of Alexander the Great, Alexander was supposed to be bisexual, and, of course, his father had raped a Philip of Macedonia, one of the young males raped and brutalized in the Greek palace at that time. And that boy who was sexually abused later assassinated and had some people help him assassinate Philip of Macedonia. Anyway, Julius Caesar, it was said, was a wife to his men and a husband to his wife, Carpania. And, of course, the Romans were known for bisexuality and all kinds of sexual excesses. And we've had, down through the ages, one of the problems with homosexuals, even when it was tolerated, was national security. Well, in the Dreyfus case, that's important because the guy who was selling military secrets for French cannon, the French made the best light cannon at the time, Count Esterhazy, who was a Hungarian, somehow got into the French military academy at Saint-Cyr, and he was running, he had gambling debts, he was supposed to be married, and he was also running a male whorehouse in Paris. And so we had that example there. Then, in that same period, we had the head of Austrian military security, espionage, and Austria was at odds with Russia because of the Austria-controlled areas that had Serbs in it, and the Russians considered themselves the defenders of anything Slavic. And he was compromised, and he liked young males, and he was compromised by the Russian secret police or secret service, the military, and he later blew his brains out. And we had cases in World War One where the Germans were trying to compromise sailors who worked in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And this has been the problem. There's also a congressman who was supposedly involved. They set up a male whorehouse near the Brooklyn Naval Yard, and the congressman was implicated, but they didn't have enough proof that he was. And so then of course the problems when England became thoroughly Protestant, they invite the last Queen of England, not Elizabeth, but I forget who it was. Anyway, she didn't have, I think it was Caroline, she didn't have any heirs, so they invited a Dutch Protestant, William of Nassau, to come to England, and with his wife, he was called William III, and he was supposedly bisexual, and he was also, the Irish hate him because he defeated the Catholic Irish at the Battle of the Boyne, B-O-Y-N-E, and of course the Unionists or the Ulsterists, Northern Irish, are Protestant, and you notice the orange in their flag. And every year they celebrate his victory of the at the Battle of the Boyne when the Irish Catholics were defeated. And the IRA and the Irish are very upset with this guy down to this age. And it's still considered that he is he was that way, as they say. The other period that we've had problems was with after World War II. Well, the English schools have always had problems with homosexuality. The writers, and part of it was Caine and their whole attitude, an upper-class vice, as one observer observed of the English, what they call public schools like Eton, Harrow, and that. Anyway, we've had some of the worst spies coming out of Kim Philby, McLean. These were people who worked in the British Foreign Office, and they were selling secrets and working as spies for the Soviet Union. And one was, I think it was McLean, who was very blatantly homosexual, would get drunk. He was arrested in Virginia when he was attached to the British British embassy in Washington. He was with a young black man, reportedly having sex. And these are people who have been selling secrets. And, of course, there were problems with the British Navy, a guy named Vassal. And we've had other problems here in the States with in our military with this problem. But these people have served throughout history. They just didn't politicize it, I guess you can put it that way. We're going to continue. I'm translating some of the tapes that I've done for Western Public Radio. And I invite you to go to an updated thing on the Toyota mess, speaking from some personal experience and people that we know, at Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas, at YouTube, and go to our website, Amicus Veritas, same spelling, AmicusVeritas. And we shall be back, weather permitting, on Thursday, and I'll get the topics ready, and there'll be some music that have historical significance to topics that we're discussing today, and also a birthday, one of the great historical writers and correspondents. And also today we should remember Ira Hayes, the guy who raised the flag at Iwo Jima. He died tragically Pima Indian, and then, of course, San Francisco photographer Rosenthal took that famous photo. Thanks for listening, and go view Amicus Veritas at YouTube. Mm-hmm.